The Mill Stream at East Morling, and this is Footnotes Part 2. I'm Richard Dove, and I'm off to meet my classical music friend, expert, Stuart Melson, in the woods. Stuart, we've come to your backyard almost, your stomping ground of East Morling. What's so special about where we are now?
Well, we are in what you might call the ordinary countryside, and it's actually very beautiful. We've got the orchard in front of us, the Cottenham Orchard, and the field we're in used to be a cow's field. Over in the distance, looking north, we've got the Kent Downs area of outstanding natural beauty. Now, I think that this ordinary countryside here should be an AOMB because there's some rather lovely species of flora and fauna here. We've also got just behind us Manningham House, which many, many years ago used to be a primary school. But today, with
your wife went there.
She did. She was a pupil of the school in the days when there were cows in this field and where there was a large village population of younger people. Today, we know that our population is aging. So Manningham House is actually now an old people's home, which is sad, but it's very nice for the people who live here because they've got such fresh air. And just to tell you that Manningham House is named after one of the 16th century worthies of East Morling. Manningham's statue is in the church.
Any musical pedigree there?
I don't believe that there's any musical pedigree at all with Manningham. I know of no lute songs that he might have penned for a cold winter's night in East Morling, but we do have some interesting Civil War history here, because also in our church is the final resting place of Colonel Matthew Tomlinson, who is a very brave officer in Cromwell's army. And Tomlinson actually looked after Charles I just before Charles's horrible execution. When the regicides were eventually rounded up, Tomlinson's name was there, and they went for him. But he was able to keep his life and his freedom because Charles I thought that he was a perfect English gentleman. And he actually gave him, so the legend goes, a silver toothpick in memory of the king's final time and Tomlinson's time with him as a friend. But the regicides, they said, "Well, Tomlinson, you are a very bad man, but we're not going to chop your head off. We're going to send you down to live under house arrest in East Morling. Provided you go and live with your relatives and stay out of trouble, we'll leave you alone." And Tomlinson lived for the rest of his days in East Morling. So there's a little bit of Civil War history there.
Well, shall we venture towards the woods and then see how the muse takes us?
We will, but we also have some music from other composers that I can tell you about, which has a very local influence and meaning. These talks are all about obscure people, and we have a composer called Frederick Wood, who was actually a Lancastrian. But Wood, in 1923, wrote a series of little portraits of Kent for organ, and one of the movements is called Aylesford Bridge, and Aylesford Bridge is just 3 miles or so from here. There's another movement about the bells of Rochester Cathedral, and Rochester is just 9 miles to the north along the River Medway. And another part of the suite is an impression of Kent's very well-known orchards and fruit growing. And we may be able to hear, if our sound engineer can do it, some wonderful examples of Frederick Wood's music.
Well, let's go first for Aylesford Bridge, a place that I know well because I live near there. So Aylesford Bridge, let's listen to that.
Thank you.
Well, that was Frederick Wood and Aylesford Bridge, and we're now in the orchard, and all I can hear is the sounds of mechanical and electrical sawing.
Yes, it's terrible. Unfortunately, the blight of B&Q has spread across our land. But if you were to come here in May time, thanks to the lockdown that we've experienced, the nightingale population of the orchard grew. And this area here, which is now a tangle of wintry branches, actually belongs to somebody, but right. The person seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth.
Right.
It's a village mystery. And the orchard was once a fruitful orchard. I mean, I've known the orchard since 1987, when there were quite high yields still of apples and pears. Today, the orchard, after 30 years of neglect, has come back to being a wood. And you can see around you there are little oak saplings, there are walnut trees that have grown. There's a vast undergrowth and a tangle which has encouraged so much wildlife. For example, we have orchids here. And as I mentioned, we have the nightingale population, which came back in April and May. Right. And it was a delight to come here at dusk and listen to them. So this orchard is a natural sanctuary. But the point is that we must preserve these little parts of our ordinary countryside, because these fragments of land, with all the traffic around us and the B&Q people and the chainsaws, it is these places that keep the soul of Kent.
Shall we just pause and just listen to the sound of the orchard?
Well, let's listen to the sound of the orchard.
Yeah, sadly, traffic as well. But
I'm afraid the bypass in the distance.
Well, we're further into the woods. I think we've got to say this is a woods now.
It is a wood.
You can see that there are some regimented rows of trees here, but it's becoming less regimented.
Yes.
It's becoming more wonderfully chaotic.
It is. It's a natural haven. And it's our very own wildlife sanctuary, without having a sign on it saying wildlife sanctuary. It's a natural, real place. And I gather that one of the BBC naturalists, Mike Dilger, came here at the invitation of filmmaker Daniel Markham. And Mike Dilger commented on the lichens and the leaves and the overgrown bushes that we have as being indicators of a tremendously healthy natural environment and also very good air. We also have orchids in the orchard. We should call it the orchid orchard.
Yes, we should.
There's also a rabbit warren. And occasionally you can see some quite interesting birds of prey. And there are bullfinches as well. So there's much to value and cherish here. All the more so because this district is becoming inundated with housing applications. And there has to come a time when we have to say stop. Otherwise, we will simply have the village of East Malling as part of a larger conurbation, a sort of suburb, and we're all trying to stop that from happening in the village.
You mentioned to me another composer that I have never heard of.
Yes.
Who has very distinct Kent connections, George Dyson.
Now, George Dyson, in 1930, when he was actually working in Winchester, he was at Winchester College. This is the beginning of the pilgrim route, don't forget, Winchester to Canterbury. Here we are, midway, perhaps, on the pilgrim route. And Dyson wrote in honour of Chaucer and medieval culture and medieval England a fantastic cantata called the Canterbury Pilgrims. So all of the people who assembled on the pilgrimage at the Tabard Inn in Southwark in 14th century England are all mentioned and created in music in the cantata. And Dyson produced a very breezy, outdoor, very straightforward music. Dyson rejected continental modernism. He wanted simple, noble tunes, almost hymn-like tunes. And we have all of this in his magnificent work, The Canterbury Pilgrims, which was revived about, I think it was in about 1996. The work hadn't been played for ages, and the London Symphony Orchestra and the late Richard Hickox revived the work, and it was recorded by Shandos Records. And we have this superb piece of English music which begins at the Tabard Inn with this rather lovely overture.
we're now deep into the orchard, and that says George Dyson there, but Holst, I know we didn't quite cover him in Essex, but there is a Kent link.
Yes, in 1927, Holst came down to Kent. He was commissioned to write a piece for Canterbury Cathedral, and the piece is called The Coming of Christ, and it's another really obscure work, but made flesh, as it were, by the enterprising recording which M. Marshall Luck of the English Music Festival commissioned. So we now have a recording of The Coming of Christ, so it's not an obscure work anymore. But the work achieved great fame in its day, and Holst enjoyed walking along the Pilgrim's Way, along the ancient trackways across the county. And I just thought I could read just a tiny bit of what M. Marshall Luck said about this work. Holst, he spent some time in the area himself in rehearsals and meetings with Bell, who was the Dean of Canterbury Cathedral who commissioned it, and he was also the cathedral organist. And he took the opportunity of these regular visits to Canterbury to walk the Pilgrim's Way. The play, which is The Coming of Christ, because it was a sort of mystery play, features a heavenly host, four angels, the Spirit of Christ, and the three kings and the shepherds, and opens with the angels announcing the Spirit of Christ's intention to save mankind. And that's a message for today.
It is. Is it time for a little more music?
I can think of nothing better than Frederick Wood and his impression of Kent's beautiful orchards and fields. Here is that very piece, played on the organ of St. Ignatius Loyola in New York. To say that this walk of ours today, Richard, has been a very refreshing event, because although we've got a grey sky, there is a lovely breeze blowing through the woodland, and if we continue, we'll come out at the mill stream of East Morling, which used to power the mill and the local industry. But now the mill stream again is a perfect, idyllic, preserved stream with wild watercress beds, and there are water voles, and we simply cannot lose any of this valuable ordinary, as I said at the beginning, the ordinary countryside, because it has no protection and it has no designation, but we simply can't afford to lose it.
Well, Stuart, I think that's a powerful message, and given that what we're looking out on is absolutely exquisite, it's nature at its finest here, isn't
it?
It's
beautiful.
We're moving on to our next podcast with a very different landscape. We're heading to the beach and we're heading to Romney Marsh. And why is that significant?
They always talk about it as being a world on its own, a country on its own almost. What was it they said? The world is divided into Africa, Asia and Romney Marsh. And we know that in the lonely landscape, where there's a fragment of the old Southern Railway single line that runs through the marshy landscape, there are some ruins of churches and there are some very ancient churches there. But we know that in 1947, Vaughan Williams wrote some music for a film all about Romney Marsh. So we can bring in Ralph Vaughan Williams, the great 20th century master symphonist of England.
Well, I think we'll venture further into the woods, Stuart, and join you all in our next broadcast out on the beach on windswept Romney Marsh. So from Stuart Milson, classical music editor and reviewer of the Quarterly Review, and myself, Richard Dove, is goodbye.
Goodbye.